Tuesday, June 24th. This is Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And my name is Avi Wolfman Arendt. Cherry, as the poet Cornell Haynes Jr. once said.
Ooh, you quoting poets. Oh, go ahead.
It's getting hot in here. Indeed, it's very, very hot today in Philadelphia. Has been for the last few days. Dangerously hot. Mm-hmm. No secret, climate change is making days like this more frequent here in Philadelphia and cities around the world. So cities have a big question to confront. How do we make this urban environment cooler? And that's really tough because urban environments tend to heat up for all sorts of structural and engineering reasons. Mm-hmm. So here in Philadelphia, we wanted to pose the questions to some experts and you. What should Philadelphia do to address extreme heat? Give us some ideas. We're going to read them in throughout the show today. That's in our main segment. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube, drop a comment right there in the chat. And I did not mean to mislead you, by the way. Cornell Haynes Jr. is Nelly.
I realized that. I got it at the end. I was like, wait, I feel like I know that poet.
that verse sounds so familiar.
but I want to encourage people to call in. I want to encourage people to email in because I would put our listeners, our callers, up against any other show's listeners and callers because they always have great ideas.
Yeah.
So, yeah, call in 888-477-9499, the email studio2@whyy.org. So now we have our trio of news stories.
Yes, let's start with the story, and you're going to tell us about it, Cherry. This one's been going on for a while. We just haven't happened to talk about it yet on our show. So let's break this one down. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is the tea. So performers scheduled to take the stage at World Cafe Live are now boycotting following an ownership change, a resulting labor dispute that led to an employee walkout due to work conditions, and then subsequent firing of everybody who walked out.
So that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, yeah. The drama started earlier this spring when Joe Callahan, a Philadelphia native who happened to have brought the portal to Love Park, purchased the venue, which was dealing with financial issues. And if you haven't been to World Cafe Live, it's a wonderful venue, music venue, restaurant, a lot of emerging artists, as well as smaller established artists perform there.
It's right there in like the bib of West Philly, right as you cross over into West Philly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so Callahan came on board as CEO in April. Soon after, employees started complaining about late paychecks, unfair treatment, and labor tensions began to escalate.
Late paychecks, that's a red flag.
That's a red flag right there, yes. Employees walked off the job during a show earlier this month. Callahan subsequently fired all of the people who walked out. Now, some of the artists like Oren Evans, Pariah Sinclair, and several other artists who were scheduled to perform there, they have said that they are now boycotting the venue to stand in solidarity with the fired employees. That's according to Philadelphia Magazine. And Callahan has told news outlets that the problems were caused by miscommunication and failures of the former leadership. He said that the venue had been dealing with financial struggles and the handoff was not done efficiently.
Well,
so
first,
drama.
Yeah, drama for sure. At first, I would say I'm rooting for World Cafe Live.
Yes.
To continue. It's a wonderful venue. Haven't been there in a while, but you know, every time you go, it really is a special space.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the artists starting to boycott and not do the shows. That's like the bridge you can't cross. Because once that starts to happen and artists feel pressure not to play there, that's a really hard can of worms to put back in the can, right?
Yeah.
And I've been seeing, I was on Instagram just the other day, a local artist saying, hey, I'm postponing my show indefinitely. Like, I don't know how the management fixes that one. Because no artists means no product, means no venue.
Yeah, and they really need the artists. And what's also interesting, which the Philadelphia Magazine article points out, is that a lot of those concert tickets are still posted as available on the website, even though the artists have said that they are not coming there. So, you know, it's just a tumultuous time there. I hope they fix it because I really do like going to see performances at World Cafe Live.
Speaking of big messes. Story number two.
Let's transition.
Yeah. I'm back, baby. So it's primary election day in New York City. as you probably know, big showdown up there between a well-known establishment Democrat and a progressive upstart. Well, down the turnpike in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, a version of that is playing out at the local level, and it's about to land in court. We have details here from Alfred Lubrano in The Inquirer, and here is the backstory. A couple weeks back, a slate of progressive Democrats beat the party-endorsed candidates in Cherry Hill's race for Camden County Committee, the Triple C, as I call it. This was a massive upset. But because of some eccentricities with how this particular voting process works, there are still a bunch of vacancies that need to be filled on the county committee. And the party machine, the sort of old guard here, is suing, saying that their candidates who lost this election should get to fill those vacancies instead of allowing the three winning progressive candidates to make those same appointments. And now it's headed to court in a battle of the upstarts versus the old guard versus arcane New Jersey electoral law that I don't really understand, but I'm trying to explain right now. Pretty interesting dynamic, Cherry.
So interesting. And what was also interesting is that the progressives beat the establishment with 62% of the vote. So it really wasn't close.
Yeah. And people were shocked by the outcome, by the way.
Jersey politics shocked me a little bit. You're like, oh, a trucker beat the established guy? Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And so, you know, you have this situation where you have a slate of three and a slate of 70-some people.
Yeah.
But the 70-some people think that they're just going to force the people who won to put them on the committee. And so there's this battle of the wills there. And the thing is,
and do the people, if they succeed, which I'm not sure they will, but if they succeed, do they think the voters will look kindly on this in the future?
Oh,
I mean,
goodness.
Honestly, yeah. I would be so upset if I voted for the progressives and then 70 of the other people got in. I mean, I would be upset.
And then they would be the majority and nothing would change, right? So, but when you're used to having power, you know, it's tough to give it up. So, yes.
How do you feel about the name Cherry Hill, New Jersey? As someone with the, first name Cherry.
You know,
do people ever make that connection?
Not really, but I actually
like
Cherry Hill.
I'm the first one?
Yeah, I really like, they call me Cherry, like the fruit.
Tells
people. But I like Cherry Hill. I didn't know it was the largest municipality in Camden County.
It is indeed. It's bigger than Camden now. And I think it's like, if all the suburban municipalities, I think it's like second to Upper Darby.
Yeah, I
like
to shop
bigger
in
than
Cherry
Wilmington.
Hill, so.
It's bigger than Camden. You know, it's a lot of people live in Cherry Hill now.
Yeah, I like it over there.
Story number three. This would be, I guess, cherries on a restaurant menu, perhaps.
Yes.
Although I don't know if there were in this case.
So WHYY's Check Please host and friend of Studio 2, Kehlani Palmisano, wrote a restaurant review for Philadelphia Magazine titled, get this, I Endured Philly's Worst New Bar, So You Won't Have To.
Whoa.
And in it, she probably gives the most scathing reviews that I've ever heard or read in Philadelphia Magazine. The review was for a newsroom, a Japanese style speakeasy that just opened in Northern Liberties. Before I comment about this, Avi, I'll let you read some of Kehlani's comments written in the article.
Well, let me just say before I read them, I think I'm a nice person overall, but there's a little dark spot in my soul that loves a really bad restaurant movie album review, because the writing is often very good, as it is in this case. Just a few selections here. The food was a series of comical fiascos. The rice was so gummy, it cemented itself to my teeth.
Ow.
I had to excavate it from my molars with my tongue, contorting my face while trying to maintain conversation. Also called it a full of cringeworthy gimmicks designed for Instagram. That was the review of Newsroom.
So I want to say this. I love Kehlani. I respect her so much. Uh-huh. We're doing a crossover show on Check Please. So love and light. Okay.
Yeah.
But I went to Newsroom and I was shocked by her review because I loved it.
Wow.
I absolutely enjoyed it. My husband and I went. We had a ball. But then again, I love speakeasies, you know?
Why do you like speakeasies?
I just love
the secrecy.
You don't
think they're gimmicky?
I love the secrecy of it. I
like
a good gimmick.
Because Prohibition has been over for like 100 years.
I like a good gimmick. I like a good place. You can dress up and get some cool drinks. And that's what we did. The food was delicious in my mind. There was no, you know.
Wait, can I ask you a quick question before we go to break?
And there was a woman doing acrobatics by my head.
That sounds like a nightmare. But just, I say this with love. I say this with love. You are such a positive person. Are there restaurants you actually don't like?
There are, but I won't say them out loud on this show. But yes, there are a number of places I don't like, and I typically don't necessarily post about it, but I actually did a reel for this one. That's how much I liked it.
All right, so everyone who's listening right
Kehlani,
now, go to Newsroom and tell us how bad or good it was, and we'll do a whole show. And I'm just kidding. We're going to do a whole show about heat coming up. That's a much more serious topic. Give us a call. Your solutions. How can we cool down Philly? Email studio2@whyy.org.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. The time is 12:19. The temperature is 98 degrees in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Wish I was referencing a boy band there. I'm not. The real feel is 106. Translation, it's hot.
And it's getting hotter. As the planet warms, Philly has to deal with more of these steamy summer days. 50 years ago, an average summer featured about 16 days over 90 degrees. Today, we break 90 about 30 times a year.
And that is especially dangerous in urban environments that tend to trap heat. Now, there are ways to combat the so-called heat island effect, but picking the right ones could literally be the difference between life and death.
Luckily, we have some experts with us to explain what cities are doing and what they should be doing. Kurt Schickman joins us via Zoom. Kurt is the founder of KS Advisory, a climate resilience consulting firm. Kurt, welcome back to Studio 2. Nice to have you.
Great to be here, Cherry. Thanks.
Yes. And we also have in studio with us Sophia Schmidt, our very own, as she's a reporter covering environment for WHYY's Plan Philly. Welcome back, Sophia.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And we want to hear from you. We want your bright ideas. What should cities like Philadelphia do to address extreme heat? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you are watching on YouTube, drop a comment in the chat. I guess someone's got an idea off the bat. I'm just going to bring in Gary from Bala Cynwyd, who has an idea for us on how to cool down Philly. Hey, Gary, you are on Studio 2. Hit us with your idea to lead off the show this hour.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Everybody tends to be dehydrated. They just don't drink enough water. And diet anything is a lie. Water is best.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons people don't drink water is they think, I'm going to have to pee. And if you're out someplace and you're not sure, I mean, when you got to go, you got to go. And where do you wait? So I can think of two solutions to helping people drink more water. There are some apps I've seen in London where you can have places that you can go to pee. And there's an app for that.
To tell you where there's a public restroom,
I've also seen where some people charge a little bit of money to use their bathroom. Or to just be able to tip a nice place that you can go in and use their bathroom. I think that more places to pee means people drink more water, and that's good not only for general health, especially when it's too hot.
All right. Thinking about the whole body experience
Gary
there. Thank
from
you, Gary.
Bala Cynwyd.
All right. So let's start, Kurt Schickman, just by talking about, like, I guess, well, here's the way I'm thinking about it. Take us down, like, a typical street in a place like Philadelphia, and point out to me the things that are going to make that street hotter, like the typical, the built infrastructure on a typical average street that's going to make things hotter.
Sure. Well, pretty much everything. So you've got a dark, impermeable road, which was at one point a natural you know, permeable surface, grass or something else, that is going to absorb sunlight and re-radiate heat from that from that surface, and that's going to affect the quality of that pavement. It's also going to affect the temperature that people are walking through, either on the sidewalk or when they're crossing the street. If that street doesn't have a lot of street trees, or if those trees are very young, then you're not going to get a lot of shade either, and that's going to create a lot of additional heat, not just for people on the street, but especially if you've got, you know, kind of a row home type community where those trees are not just providing shade to the people on the sidewalk, but also perhaps shading the houses themselves, the windows of the houses themselves during the hottest parts of the day, helping to keep those homes cooler. So that's another piece that you might see. We have walls and roofs that are often dark colored that are absorbing the sun's energy and doing the same thing that we've just described on the pavement. And then you've got people inside the buildings, which may not recognize that, you know, a 90 degree day or an 85 degree day, for that matter, might actually be very dangerous for them, the same way for a super fit person, it might be something closer to, you know, 95 degrees or 98 degrees, that there are a lot of factors that go into what makes heat dangerous for people. And we don't always know, we're not fully self-aware always. And so you may have a lot of people in those communities that may not know that they're at much greater danger than the warnings that are going out may suggest. And you may also have your air conditioning units that may not be turned on because they're too expensive. They're not cooling the inside of the building, even though they look like they're there. Or they may be on. And in doing that, they're cooling off the inside space, but adding to the heat load outside. So those are sort of the things I guess I would think of as I'm walking down a typical Philadelphia street that might contribute to someone's experience of heat in that moment.
Yeah, so just the roads and the buildings, that's all. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what's making it hot. So
which is a lot.
Everything
around
the urban
you.
Environment, yeah.
So, you know, you hear that. What Kurt had to say, Sophia, we want to bring you into the conversation. Are there things, I mean, everything that Kurt just talked about is present in Philadelphia, but I know we're taking efforts in the city to try to cool things off. Tell us about some of the things that the city is doing.
So during a heat wave, a lot of the city's efforts are sort of like emergency response. So like the city will declare a heat health emergency, which opens up cooling centers. So basically giving people a place to go during the day. If you're like living outside or if you don't have adequate air conditioning in your home. So cooling centers are generally libraries, community centers, senior centers, and some community like partners like Akana in Southwest Philly and Prevention Point in Kensington. And they have extended hours and they open till like 9 p.m. So they don't stay open at night overnight. So that's not an option if you need that. But that's a big one. The city will also do like extra outreach in terms of the Office of Homeless Services. So they'll do 24-hour outreach to try to get people into cool indoor spaces, and they'll open up all of the beds in the shelter system. So those are kind of the, you know, during the heat wave response. Right. In terms of trying to change the environment that Kirk was just talking about, the city has the tree plan. So they are working on planting more trees, working on preserving mature trees. So as Kirk mentioned, like, you know, a baby sapling, it's going to help us in a couple decades, but it's not helping much today. So trying to like preserve the big functional trees is part of the plan as well. But one of the things that spurred the city to create this tree plan was the fact that we were actually losing tree canopy due to development. So trees are being cut down and they're not being adequately replaced. And there are some big differences in tree canopy amongst neighborhoods, which we can get into, too.
Sure. This stat, I got this from Grid Philly. Mm-hmm. From 2008 to 2017, Philadelphia lost over 1,000 acres of tree canopy. So this is probably a good time, actually, to bring in someone who's working inside city government, trying to solve some of these problems. This is Abby Sullivan. She is the city's chief resilience officer in the Office of Sustainability. Abby, thanks so much for joining us on Studio 2.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we're talking a little bit about what cities like Philadelphia can do to cool down. Sophia Schmidt mentioned more trees. Are there other things Philadelphia is focusing on as potential solutions as we deal with this warming climate?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm so happy that she first sort of highlighted what we do during emergencies, but I think our office and some other departments are really focused more on how do we address the root cause of these issues. So in addition to the tree plan, which is phenomenal and so much great work is happening, I mean, I really do think that trees and greening are one of the best tools that we have in our tool belt for addressing heat. But as Sophia mentioned, it is going to take several decades before we really start to see the benefit from those trees. So I think there's some shorter term solutions that we're working on. Our office is relatively small, so we focus more on policy and planning. So a couple things I would highlight are that we are looking into some pilot projects that are looking into different sort of engineered solutions. So one is a cool pavement pilot that we have. So exploring whether we could put a coating on the streets that would reflect more of the light, making it, you know, the idea is that it would help with urban heat islands and reduce, you know, that heat that's being absorbed by
the street. So the street would be like a different color, or would still look black, but it would just function differently as it interacts with the sun's rays?
No, it wouldn't be black. So it is lighter. And yeah. So that's a concern, is that it could reflect too much light into driver's eyes. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're doing this pilot, is to see how effective it is, see how well it holds up in our climate, because most of the places that are using cool pavements are in very hot climates like Phoenix.
So dry climates too.
Yeah, like with that freeze thaw cycle and with salting, how it holds up. So it's a really interesting experiment. We're working with University of Pennsylvania, two different labs there, the Composto Lab and the Thermal Architecture Lab. Really phenomenal students that are taking measurements for us. So that's one thing that we're doing. We're trying to sort of get a second phase of that pilot installed this summer to continue that work. I think one of the things that Kurt mentioned is really interesting is that, you know, all of these things are very complex. So what we're finding is that the surface of that road is definitely cooler, but as that light is reflected, the radiation is reflected back up into the air, it can actually make a human body potentially feel hotter. So we need to explore sort of all these different ways that it could impact humans. So we need to do more research and collect more data, but really interesting project.
And I wanted to also ask you about the, I know there's some efforts to develop cool roofs as well, because that's another thing that can sort of help reflect heat. Can you talk about that? I know, is that a potential pilot as well?
Yes, absolutely. We have, so the city of Philadelphia already has a cool roof ordinance. So what that means is that any new development is required to have a cool roof. So similar idea, you have this lighter coating that has reflective materials in it, so it helps, you know, reflect that sunlight back into the air, and it, you're not absorbing that heat. We have that ordinance, so that's for new development, but most of Philadelphia is already built out. Most of these heat islands are neighborhoods with low canopy cover. So we're exploring this idea of creating basically a cool roof program for the city. And we're in very early stages right now, but we are going to launch that cool roof pilot in Strawberry Mansion. And I think what, you know, there's already a lot of research that shows what the benefit of a cool roof is. What we're trying to do with this pilot is to see, can we actually scale it up to a neighborhood level? So I don't have the exact number we're trying to figure out with our funding source, like how many homes we could do. But the idea is that rather than just like offering it to a homeowner in like a patchwork fashion, we want to see if we can actually start reducing those heat islands if we do this sort of neighborhood wide.
Kind of focus in. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So let me get you out of here on this, Abby Sullivan. Based on the information you have now, the data available to you, and if I came to you right now with $100 million, $1 billion to work on this effort, where would you drive the majority of those dollars, knowing what you know today?
For heat?
Yeah, for heat.
I mean, I do think increasing the canopy is one of our best solutions.
Yeah.
But I also think we need shorter-term solutions and engineered solutions, as we've been discussing. I think we need things in the interim before that canopy grows, things like shade sails and shade structures for places like daycares and recreation centers. And also, I guess, I mean, a huge thing that we hear over and over, I mean, there's a lot that the city can do through services and programs, but what people want is to be cool in their home.
Yeah.
They don't want to have to go to a cooling center, right? So I think if I had that those resources, I think a big amount would be put towards programs like PEAs, Built to Last, that really look at the home level and look at solutions like weatherization, you know, really sealing up the home first. So you, you know, stop the bleeding first,
make it
sealed. Then you add a really efficient heating and cooling system, like a mini split system. And then, you know, the gold standard would to be then have, you know, rooftop solar that then has a battery so that you can be resilient to outages. I think also really focusing on getting people safe in their homes is where I would put that funding.
I like that, Abby. And as we wrap up, I want to bring in this question from Jonathan on YouTube. He says, some years ago, the city was offering free trees to homeowners. Is that program still in effect?
Yes, there is still a free tree program. I think it's if you just Google Tree Philly, there's giveaways at certain times of year.
Well, thank you. Right. Abby Sullivan, she's the city's chief resilience officer in the Office of Sustainability. Thank you so much for your time on Studio 2.
Yeah, thank you.
And Gerardo emails us and says, very simply, trees, 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 trees. So, Kurt Schickman, is that really the answer here? Just more trees? I mean, there's just like, it feels to me that there's this big menu of things to choose from. The need is very urgent. And I want to make sure we're picking the right thing here. I like trees. Mm-hmm. Is that where we should be driving our dollars right now? Trees, trees, trees?
Well, I think Abby said it perfectly. I think ultimately we want beautiful, cities that are verdant and green and shady that has benefits that go beyond just heat. And so that's the gold standard. That's where we want to head. The reality also is that, as Abby mentioned, I think quite rightly, that's the vision for 5, 10, 15 years from now when the trees we plant today start to provide all of those services to us. So there are interim steps we need to take. There's also the reality that in some cases we can't place the trees where we want to place the trees or where they're desperately needed the most because of the way the roads are, the way the sidewalks are, the amount of space that you might have to plant the tree so that it will survive to its maturity. So it does need to be sort of a both and or an all and type solution set. I don't think there's one that I would choose over the other. So, for example, things like addressing the thermal comfort in homes immediately. That's shade that can be provided by shade structures and then eventually trees, but with cool roofs and walls that basically immediately start to cool off the outside structure and therefore allow less heat to come into buildings. These are critical opportunities that we could be doing today that shouldn't be seen as an either or. Just to be honest with you, that drives me crazy
because
we have cities in a terrible way. We built dark impermeable surfaces. Anything we do that pulls us away from that is a step in the right direction. And the choice shouldn't be between two great options. It should be between, you know, a whole set of those against what we've done here, you know, here to date. So I think there's room for all of it in the ideal solution here.
Well, but I guess the reason I ask is because when we talk about like triaging and we talk about making sure people are cool in their homes, the most obvious solution that comes to my mind is, well, give them a functioning air conditioner, at least in one room in the house. But as we've talked about with some of these other solutions, that can create
more heat
in the environment. So you sort of, you know, solve a problem here, create a problem there. And that's why I ask about sort of focusing the dollars, because I just wonder how much triage should we do for people to make sure they're as cool as possible in their homes versus understanding the compounded effects of that if we do it at scale.
I mean, it's a great question. I mean, you're absolutely right. It also requires not just a physical air conditioner, but the energy to run that air conditioner.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And also the economic wherewithal and confidence that you can pay for the energy bill when it comes. We have systems that, we have policies and programs that provide some support for that. But, you know, policy isn't a forever thing. It's not always persistent. And that's not Philadelphia's fault. That's a much broader state and national challenge. So people have to be confident that they can afford to run the air conditioner that they have. So there's a whole bunch of issues here that have to be dealt with kind of together to make this work. So I do think that, you know, if you have the funding to do it, and that's a big if, but this idea that we make a home as passively comfortable as we can, we provide as much shade to that home as we can, we provide as much ability to reflect as we can, Invest also in other active cooling solutions that shouldn't not necessarily replace air conditioning, but might be enough of a difference in temperature to help someone survive to the next day. And actually, Phil is a great example of this from several years ago. Investing in fans and understanding when to bring air into the house and when to exhaust air out of the house can actually cool houses by several degrees. Mm. And while it won't be the most comfortable home to be in, it may make enough of a difference in days like today that will help people make it through to the next day. And those are things that you can run on very low energy. Mm. Again, I don't want to say that they're a replacement for people being fully thermally comfortable and thermally safe in their homes, but there are different things we can be doing here. And I think the urgency is there. I think, you know, at the top of the hour, you said you basically doubled the number of days over 90. And it's going to continue to go that direction. So I think this is an area that all cities need to be focusing on and pulling out all the stops to address.
Yeah, and I want to read a couple comments, but also invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. What should cities do to address extreme heat? The number is 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, keep those comments coming in the live chat. We got an email from Will who says, cars heat up cities by themselves and also through the infrastructure required to support them. We can make the environment more livable and resilient to heat stress by reclaiming our streets from cars for people, which involves replacing asphalt with green space. Good idea from Will. We also have somebody on the line. We have Brian from Norristown who has an idea. Brian, you're on Studio 2. Share us. Tell us, what should cities do to make it cooler?
It just dawned on me that hey, how you doing?
How you doing, Brian?
I'm listening to you guys. I'm doing great. but I was just, you know, being a fly on the wall while I was listening. And the idea dawned on me that it would be pretty much the same principle of how you build bridges, but it would be, you know, an interlocking canopy system. Mm. And, you know, if you look at a cell phone tower, it's there, it's high enough, but you know, it's good for us to be on a cell phone and everything. That's great. But, you know, if we could, you know, coincide that with a cooling system and, you know, just have a canopy, you know, a material that's it doesn't attract heat, but at the same time, it's strong enough to resist high winds and stuff. I think that would be a great idea. And, you know, it could just just blanket large areas. And if, you know, while doing that, you know, you could connect them all, it could probably be like a nice national monument or something, you know, like for people to come
see. Yeah, come see the big sunshade. I like it. All right.
That's a big old sunshade. Yeah. Brian from Norristown.
So I wanted to read in a couple more ideas here. Mm-hmm. Email from Matt says, how about some city encouragement or code requirements for solar shading? Kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Especially when builders insist on dark color facades. Mm. We see lots of near black color masonry and useless pergolas on new residential construction. Solar shading is low cost and easily planned. Yusef from Upper Darby also says more trees, more cheese, but also agrees with Gary about more bathrooms.
Yeah. Okay. The bathroom thing was a very interesting idea.
Yeah, that's
for me.
Out of the box. Can I ask you, Sophia Schmidt, mm-hmm. about something that Kurt mentioned earlier, which is fan use? Because sometimes people have some tools mm-hmm. that could help keep them cool, but they're not using those tools necessarily the best possible way when there's a heat crisis. So can you give some folks advice on how to use fans in your house, the water in your house, all that stuff to keep you cool when it's really, really bad out there?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, air conditioning access is a huge issue, not just like whether or not you have a functioning air conditioner, but like Kirk mentioned, like, can you pay the bills? Are you rationing your air conditioning because mm-hmm. you're worried about high bills? And there has Esperanza, which is a nonprofit based in Hunting Park in Philly, has done a study surveying residents about whether you have AC, how much you run it. And actually, the primary barrier was not having functioning AC, but it was the bills. Mm. So, you know, one option that you can turn to is a fan that might cost, you know, use up less electricity. But it's important to know when to use it, because if it's really, really, really hot inside your home and you have a fan blowing on you, it can sort of act like the blower on your convection oven. Mm. And it's not actually helping cool down your body. You might think it feels a little bit better, but that can sort of be tricking
you. Does it make you hotter?
Yeah, because it's blowing the hot air onto you. Mm-hmm. And so above 90 degrees, the National Weather Service recommends do not point. So if, sorry, the inside temperature. If
you're, in your home.
Your
yeah.
home is 90 degrees. Don't point the fan onto yourself. If you can, use that fan in a window to like exhaust the hot air or bring in cooler air from outside. That is a safe way to use it. That temperature threshold might be different for different people, like we were talking about earlier. So I was talking to a researcher the other day who explained to me that people are still trying to figure out exactly where that threshold is for older adults. Yeah. And that's sort of a area of ongoing research. Another option, if you don't have functioning AC in your home, you can use is water to cool your body. Well, first off, hydrate. That is the number one. Like, yes, make absolutely. Sure you're drinking so much water.
Need, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Avoid caffeine and alcohol can dry you out. So if you have access to water, which another thing that happens during heat health emergencies is the water department stops shutoffs for non-payment. Mm-hmm. You can fill up a sink with water and place your hands and forearms into the sink for periods of like 10 minutes at a time. Go about your day, come back. And an expert told me that that can actually help lower your heart rate and the cardiovascular strain that comes with overheating. So that can be a functional way to stay safer.
I love that. And we have David from Upper Darby on the phone who also has a great idea. Well, he says he has another idea for keeping cool. David, you're on Studio 2. What's your idea for beating the heat?
Hi, guys. It is David from Upper Darby, and I live in a corner unit of an apartment building. And right now I'm sitting, and I have two cats, so I have to be careful. But my door that leads to the hallway is open. I live in a corner unit, like I said. I have a window fan in one window. I've got a fan pointing at me in the corner in my lounge chair. I've got another fan helping the air out the window. And with the natural cross breeze, my Venetian blinds are drawn, and it's bearable. I've got wind on me. The fan's on high, and I drink lots of fluids, and I grow up without air, so, you know.
Your body's acclimated. Yeah.
Well, Dave, first of all, stay safe. We want you to stay safe. I want to ask Kurt Schickman about cross breezes. Yeah. Is that something that people can turn to? And can we design for cross breezes as well when we're talking about building or readapting buildings? That sort of idea of like, let's just use some of that air in our environment to keep us a little bit cooler.
Yeah, I mean, if we're getting into building design and we have the luxury of new buildings that we can build with this in mind, yes, there's absolutely a tremendous number of things we could be doing. Some of it relates to where we put, the heating sources in our house. So having, our bedrooms next to, the south facing wall means that those rooms are going to be pretty hot. Maybe we have a kitchen there or a bathroom there, which wouldn't be something you're going to be in very much on those walls instead. So there's that. Certainly, if you can get, in the corner unit example is a good example, mm-hmm. where if you can get a natural breeze moving through, that's very useful. I mean, I would go back to what Sophia mentioned, though, that you have to be very careful around the temperatures that you're doing that and making sure that you're exhausting hot air and bringing in cool air, relatively cool air, if you will. So those are important. I think the examples around, the use of water are fantastic and very practical and very accessible. Another thing you can do there is a wet washcloth around your neck. Has a similar effect as having your hands in the sink. It helps reduce the temperature of your body, and it helps cool your blood and your heart rate. Similarly, with around your ankles and those sorts of things as well. So there's a lot of things we could be doing with the types of things we have on hand, and being creative like that is great as long as you're not blowing hot air directly on you when it's very hot in the house.
Yeah. I want to talk about, and Sophia, I want to bring you back into the conversation and sort of talk about vulnerable folks. What should folks be, because I think if you have high blood pressure or you're dealing with, or you're a senior citizen, right? Your threshold of what's too hot is a little bit different. Are there things that people can do if they are more vulnerable to the heat to sort of prepare themselves and get their body acclimated and stay as cool as possible?
Well, I think it's a lot of the stuff we've been talking about with hydration and just getting into a cool space and sort of like being really aware of the symptoms and not letting it sneak up on you, because that's what I've heard is like it's kind of like a, frog in a boiling pot of water. Like you don't quite notice as it's
getting
worse.
Hot.
Yeah. But some of the kind of risk factors you mentioned, senior citizens. So I've heard I'm sure every body is different, but 65, over 65, you're at higher risk for heat illness. Cardiovascular issues, so heart and lung issues like COPD and asthma, put you at higher risk. And then certain medications, so also diabetes as a condition puts you at higher risk, but some of the diuretic drugs and beta blockers, which are prescribed for, you know, high blood pressure, heart issues, diabetes, these can affect how your body kind of deals with fluids. Mm-hmm. And so that can put you at higher risk as well.
And Kurt, I wanted to bring you back in because I know that you've been working on a project that actually helps, that brings AI, artificial intelligence in to sort of help people who may be vulnerable to heat, you know, catch some of the warning signs and do some prophylactic things so that they stay well despite the heat. Can you tell us about that project?
Sure. So I think you mentioned it a little bit earlier, too, that this need to push towards human health outcomes in our warning systems, not just weather conditions, is so important. And so we're seeing that happen in states like California, where they've, mm-hmm. they now have a heat health score. I think Abby mentioned it as well for Philadelphia. The project I'm working on with this group called Aris Health, it takes it one step further. It works with healthcare systems, and it essentially creates these AI nurses that have been trained on thousands of real nurses and doctors to respond to heat health challenges. And what it does is it identifies people that are living in highly risk exposed neighborhoods or highly vulnerable neighborhoods, and proactively calls them, texts them, calls them. And it doesn't just share information, it engages in a conversation. So it asks what you're planning to do with the heat. What are certain things that you might do for your pets or for your family? And then it will, you know, say, yes, that's a great idea, or you might also try this. Mm. And it engages people in a much more interactive and conversational way. And the hope then is that you will actually have people take those actions proactively and in advance of really dangerous weather, and also be ready to engage with the medical system if they find themselves with symptoms that they're learning about in this conversation. You know, we can't have 10,000 nurses calling folks every time there's a heat wave, but AI does give us an opportunity to do that. The pilot just launched actually on Sunday. They Wow. they got it out in advance of this heat wave, so it's a really exciting moment here. I would also say, you know, in addition to the things we can do for ourselves, that heat is a moment of community, that it is so important that we take the time to call our neighbors, our friends, our family, people in our houses of our communities of worship, you know, people in your pickleball league or whatever else you're involved in socially. This is the moment to connect with them, make sure they're doing okay. Do they sound all right? Do they have everything they need? It sounds like, you know, relying only on calls from, you know, a healthcare system or from the government to make sure people are safe isn't going to be enough. We really all need to play a little part here. Yeah. And so really that call can make a difference. And so I would just say, in addition to these types of ideas, just that outreach between friends and friends and family is so important on days like today.
A few more comments I want to read in here. Anna points out that some libraries are closed in Philadelphia today, which is a recurring problem. And of course, those often serve as cooling centers for folks. Domi on YouTube mentions, I did the cross breeze until yesterday, but the temperatures finally overtook the cross breeze. Mm-hmm. David on YouTube asks, is there a city that we could look to that is leading in keeping things cool? What do you think, Kurt Schickman? Is there a city we should really be paying attention to here?
Oh, man. Well, how much time do you have?
About a minute, honestly.
Okay. Well, in terms of how do we be more creative with what an area of respite or an area of coolness is, we should look to Paris. Paris has done a wonderful job of not just looking for air conditioned spaces, but other ways to use things like water fountains and areas that are outside but shaded to help people connect with those areas and get them to them and build their programs around it. So 5-minute walk from any of these types of structures with signage that helps people understand it. So it's not the home, but at least it's an opportunity to connect with areas of respite when no others exist. Mm. I'd say, you know, Abby mentioned cool roof requirements. We've seen Baltimore and Atlanta, even in the last 6 months, adopt cool roof requirements that include homes when you change your roof, and on larger buildings as well. These are cost-effective ways to keep people safe, and it gives the local industry the signal that, hey, we need to be stocking this stuff and we need to be able to put this on people's roofs when they need it. So those would be two examples I would call out quickly.
Yeah, I'm going to read this email from Elaine, who says, loose clothing, preferably natural broadcloth, cold gel packs or frozen washcloth on neck. Stay hydrated with slightly cooled water, face splashes, arms and legs, then fan to simulate evaporation from skin. I love those. Also, email from Frank. I work in Hunting Park. Trees are almost unicorns. The area trends about 10 to 15 degrees hotter than parts of the city with more trees. So another person promoting trees.
Yeah, Lisa from Upper Dublin also wanted to shout out the ice pack method. Thank you so much, Lisa. Let me thank our guests today. Sophia Schmidt, reporter covering the environment for WHYY's Plan Philly. So great to have you. And Kurt Schickman, founder of KS Advisory, a climate resilience consulting firm. So great to have your wisdom as always, Kurt. And Sophia, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Yes, and thank you so much. And Studio 2, of course, is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. We will talk with you tomorrow. Seriously, folks, stay cool. Stay safe.
Yes.